This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
Here's a breakaway chance, busting in Giroux, backhand forehand, scores! The overtime winner from Claude Giroux!
Well, if you stayed up for that one last night, perhaps you didn't hear any of Bill Carroll this morning. Maybe you're just getting up now. Joining us for Ottawa at Work, good Monday morning. That was a big sports day yesterday, but that was tough if you're getting up early and having a couple of drinks with Canada-Croatia and then staying up to watch the Senators in L.A. last night. And of course, as you heard, if you hadn't heard already, it did go into overtime. Got it done quickly in overtime, though. Claude Giroux almost right away. Beautiful goal. Looked like they were going to maybe mess it up in their own end. Scored a beauty. So the Sens have now won two in a row. DJ Smith probably safe another day. Chris Holzke, you were off last week. You were staying up late every night, but you're back in the routine today. I know you're a Habs fan anyway, but could not quite.
No, I wasn't going to stay up
for the midnight
game.
Oil, but right before your first day, right?
Like, honestly, I was staying up until roughly about like 12:30 in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning. By the end of my vacation, my body clock is just completely the opposite from the hours that I've worked for the last 5 years. Actually, for most of my adult life.
And honestly, you look very well rested.
I'm not quite awake yet, I think. I need a second cup of coffee. Even after waking up first thing at 3:30 today, I get up and I think I have half a bottle of like Dr. Pepper sitting in the fridge right now, and that seems pretty good.
Some people try to ease back into it right on the Monday after vacation. When you're a morning show person, there's no easing anywhere. That 3:30 alarm hurts. Dr. Pepper, no.
No, it's just like, it's like you lose essentially what you got back during the course of that week. But I'll be fine by hopefully Wednesday or Thursday.
Call the doctor. Dr. Pepper, what do you got? 9:08 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Time now for our Big Five.
Ottawa at Work. Big Five Stories.
Chris Holzke is back and John Krupe just sticking around. Still here. John, how are you?
Good morning. Yes. And Davis Cup. I just want to bring that up.
Yes, underreported sports story from yesterday, the fact that we won a major title in tennis.
Very exciting.
First time
I did
in
not see any
years.
Of it. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit later, break that down, but I get in trouble when I talk about tennis too much, so let me check the inbox and see if anything's coming here. But we do want to talk, this is not a sports show, but we do want to talk a little bit of sports because it was a huge day yesterday. Everyone off, of course, on a Sunday, an 11 o'clock game at the World Cup, and Canada in that position where if they had won this, even were able to come up with a draw, that they might have been able to stick around and see what happened against Morocco on Thursday. But they're gone. A loss to Croatia yesterday, but a momentous moment for sure. I'm not sure if we have that that first goal by Canada. We'll play it for you a little bit later if we don't. But the first ever goal by Canada at a World Cup, and it goes to Alphonso Davies. It was all looking beautiful right there. Like, you feel like a 1-0 lead in soccer. There's a pretty good chance that these guys are going to come away successful, certainly after the way they played against Belgium. But no. Were you both watching this, or did you have to clean the garage, or what was happening yesterday at 11 o'clock for both of you?
Here's the funny thing. So I'm running late trying to get to the game at 11 o'clock, and I'm thinking, oh, it's okay. What am I going to miss within like the first 3 or 4 minutes of the game? And I ended up missing the goal completely. And then watched the rest of the game as Canada got transformed. You know, maybe this was my fault, right? Because they scored while I wasn't watching. Then they were soundly outplayed for the rest of the game while I was watching.
It's one of our faults, for sure. I did almost exactly the same thing. Here's what you missed, Chris Holzke.
Buchanan with the cross in towards Alphonso Davies! He missed the penalty in the opener. He makes amends today. Canada's history-making moment delivered by their biggest superstar. A goal the country has been dreaming about for decades finally arrives.
I do love that it goes to Alphonso Davies, who had to be feeling the weight of the world after missing the penalty kick in the opener. And I love that his name is the one that's penciled in to the history books, but all downhill from there. And like you, Chris Holzke, I took a chance. I had a very busy day. I had to drive my daughter to Kingston. I had a lot going on later in the day. If I don't get to the gym early, I won't get it done. and I had a few things to do before the gym, so I did a 10:15 yoga class thinking I'll get back and I'll have missed maybe 5 minutes. I'll just be right. And I heard the goal in the car.
Oh, we ended
on TSN 1200.
So we both missed the first goal by Canada at the Men's World Cup. Like, yeah. John, you got to save us.
You watched it, right,
we
John?
Are we really satisfied with just the one goal?
Did you watch it, John?
Yes, I did.
All right. Yeah.
Did we really dream about this goal for decades?
I didn't even know that Canada had not scored in 1986 until I think the opener of this tournament, when suddenly that was a thing and talking about, oh, they haven't even scored a goal. I mean, 86. No one cared about soccer then.
Like the morning game this morning was 3-3, six goals.
Yep.
I'm hoping for better against Morocco. I know we're out of it, but... you know, we'll get Croatia back in hockey. Don't worry.
It would have been an awful feeling if they'd gone away from this without at least having
a goal,
having that moment, and having watched a lot of Sens playoff games where, you know, your team plays really well but just cannot drum up any offense and gets shut out. You never get that chance to just celebrate for a moment, release all that tension, and just, you know.
I love
get
soccer
into it,
how
so.
They put everything on a pedestal. The greatest moment in Canadian soccer history. Oops. Canadian men's
soccer.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people checking themselves on that. Yeah. Yeah, this is not quite a gold medal game.
It was great seeing some of the reactions that Jackie Paris picked up at the Great Glebe pub, for example. And there's this one guy, I actually want to give him a shout out, Eddie, because I declare.
Hey, Eddie.
Yeah, after seeing the vision, there's this one guy, apparently he's very visible at Atletico games as well, who just lets out this primal. Ah!
All right.
Right. And so,
off the mic, just so you know.
Yeah, so on social media, like I declare, this man is the champion. This fan is the champion of Ottawa today. And in my reply, somebody identified him, and he responded. He actually gave credit to the entire pub, but that was a next level celebration. It's great to see that kind of dedication towards Team Canada, and hopefully, we will see that again this Thursday. They do have a chance still to win their first game at the Men's World Cup ever. I think the team would prefer that there's not like a mass walk away from the team because they can't advance at this point, which maybe that's your sense typically at a tournament, even when we're playing hockey and the team is playing for bronze. Just getting one win is a big deal. And if they do it, it means that we don't have to wait 4 years again, or at least 4 years, asking the question of can they win? Hopefully they get this done on Thursday.
I mean, I will still watch because what else would I be doing Thursday morning? Oh, wait, I'm in here. But we're going to talk to some kids who are getting a buyout from class to watch that. Of course, they hope that would be a different game, that it would be a win and they're in and they're moving on in this historical moment for Canada. But I think a lot of people will still be pumped and wanting to support them. And of course, a win would just be huge and give a different feeling to this team that, you know, knows they're going to be around for this, the next World Cup, when all of North America is hosting the World Cup. So I think people will still be excited on Thursday. Maybe not John Krupe, so cynical about that first goal.
I'm not cynical. I just, just a little practical, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. Just a goal. So then in our group chat on soccer, as soon as this loss happened, people started making snarky comments, but well, at least we got the Sens, or we've seen this before. But then at least the Sens delivered something last night, so, you know. Sports fans.
Did they ever? I watched. They played fantastic hockey last night.
It was a good game.
That was probably the best game I've seen the Sens play.
I'm going to give you John Rodenberg's analysis on our brother station TSN 1200. He said this morning, sometimes those games where you don't play well and you lose, or sometimes you don't play well and you win. Sometimes you play well and you lose. But that game, they played well and they won. I thought that was a beautiful breakdown. John Rodenberg,
TSN 1200. Simmer laughed at him for that analysis. But anyway.
Were you listening to?
Yes.
Well, who's listening to Bill? Chris Holsky, were you listening to Bill this morning?
You call a switch around.
You're paid to be in here. 9:15 on News Talk 580 CFRI. I was listening to Bill as well, and Bill was talking to Riley Brockington about the Mooney's Bay Hill. We're going to talk about that next as we switch gears here. That tragic accident last winter. The response is now to close down the hill to tobogganing. A lot of people don't like this. They think it's an easy out, a cop out. Instead of making the hill safe and keeping it open to kids to enjoy this winter season, they want to just close it down completely. We want to get your take on that coming up. This is The Big Five. You're listening to Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bolt.
Ottawa at Work. Big Five stories.
People have been tobogganing, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, all types of winter activities here in the park for decades. And so there are inherent issues with tobogganing. The overwhelming response by the public. Both when the tragic accident happened last December, and more recently with the news on Friday, late Friday afternoon, that this is the direction the city's going in, was opposed to plans to cordon off or fence off the hill.
So, yes, this news came down late last week that Mooney's Bay, the tobogganing hill there, will be fenced off to prevent kids from tobogganing rather than make efforts to make the hill safer. It comes after an 11-year-old girl died in a tobogganing accident on that hill last winter. It's a tough one because this is obviously it was a tragic and heartbreaking situation with this young girl. You never, ever, ever want to see something like that happen when kids and families are out enjoying recreation in the city. At the same time, this is a hill that has been used for years by all kinds of families in that area. I always say when, you know, I'm biking home through there, through Mooney's Bay, I'm amazed at how much use that park gets. There's a lot of apartment buildings right across the way. A lot of people are out using it in all different capacities, in all different seasons, having grown up near there. Tobogganed on that hill. My whole childhood was one of our favorite places to go. It was a pretty steep hill. So there are a lot of concerns around the safety, but some people suggesting this is a bit of a cop-out by the city, playing it safe, perhaps wanting to make sure they are not in any kind of a lawsuit position rather than trying to attempt ways to make this hill what it could be for families in the area. Chris Holske, I know you were also involved when we were covering this last winter, the story of this fatal accident. It was a heartbreaker.
Yeah, and the last story, the last words of, according to her family, from about, it's tough to talk about, sorry, 11-year-old Jose, telling her brother that she didn't want to die before her passing. It's brutal, horrible tragedy that happened a year ago. That said, this is absolutely the wrong decision by staff to suggest that this hill should be closed off permanently. Because I want to think about other examples, just starting with winter sport to begin with. If someone is killed while skiing, for example, does an entire resort shut down? No. If somebody were to fall on the Rideau Canal, hurt their head, sadly pass away, would they close the Rideau Canal forever? No. I think the answer lying ahead for something like this with a sledding hill is the all-or-nothing approach is something that needs to be taken away. Perhaps something, if they're looking for a level of compromise, a grading system, for example, about how safe the hill may be at a certain time. Because I'm not going to say that hill is safe all the time. If there's like a freeze-thaw and the entire thing turns to ice, then maybe kids shouldn't be taking sled runs on it. That is not necessarily played a factor in Jose's death. I want to point that out. I want to clarify that. There was a post that was actually left in by city staff, and Riley Brockington is mad that there's no acceptance of any responsibility from the city. But aside from that, less than a minute walk away from Mooney's Bay, you have the beach in the summer, where there is a grading system that is active. It does take an effort to run it simply for the amount of bacteria that may be in the water at that time, where they have a different color-coded system, where they say that swimming is not recommended or it's closed or whatever ruling Ottawa Public Health makes on this one. Why can there not be something similar like that set up at that hill? Mm. Because if you are going to go this far to try to set up a level of fencing, or maybe it can play a role in that hill sometime in the future if conditions are no longer considered to be deemed safe, but you got to check it. You can't just try to take it away from people who have been using that hill without incident for decades.
John Krupe, what are your thoughts on this?
The city is in a no-win position here. They close it, they're going to get the feedback because it's been, it would open in 2007, as you say, so it's 15 years before there's this. I'm sure there's other incidents, but this was horrific, and you cannot discount what happened to that 11-year-old girl. So it's in a no-win position. I understand that people... I understand the people want it open, but you know the coroner had recommendations after this little girl's death, and one of them was to close off their park. And does a grading system work when you have thaw free cycles, and that happen in half an hour in Ottawa? I don't know. It's you got to use your common sense, right?
One person looks at it every day. Like, go in the morning, that's fine. It looks fine, doesn't look fine. How hard is that?
The same way they give you the ratings on the canal, just so you
know it's not like you're sending a trip
or...
Yeah, this is not like you're sending an entire ski patrol team down every single run at a ski resort, for example. It only takes one person to look at it every day. It's going to cost some money, someone's salary, or being added to their responsibility. I that should be explored as a possibility if it hasn't been explored already.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah, as a parent, you tend toward wanting to bubble wrap your kids and just protect them from everything you possibly can. But at the same time, this kind of play, this kind of experience it has an inherent value as well. You can't take everything away from them that has.
What happens
some
in the summer?
Risk,
people
right?
use that hill for exercise all the time. Somebody running up and running down. If a kid ends up getting hurt doing that, are they going to block off that hill in the summer too?
Yeah. This is a tough issue. We'll have more on this as these developments unfold, and we'll tell you more of what Riley Brockington had to say a little bit earlier as well. 927 on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you are running up and down that hill in the summer, you want to be drinking a lot of water, right? We all need to stay hydrated. It's so important. We're told all the time we're not drinking enough water. This is what water does. It's beneficial for your skin, for your organs, for this, that. If you're dehydrated, there's a myriad of possible things that can go wrong. A new study, though, says maybe we don't all actually need those 8 glasses a day, the 2 liters. Maybe that's more than what people actually need. If you are like me and you struggle all the time to get that water in, I always feel bad when I don't bring the water bottle to the side of the bed. It's like, oh my God, I don't have my water bottle. This is terrible. I'm going to be dehydrated in the morning. But when I do have it there beside the bed, I maybe have one sip right before I go to sleep and one sip when I wake up in the morning. I do not drink that whole water bottle down. I know PJ is sitting there behind the glass with his 2 liters all set right beside him. Is that your total intake for the day or is that just for the morning?
No, that's just for my shift. But I also drink like a glass before, and then I drink a glass with like electrolytes in it and vitamin C. And then the 2 liters is just while I'm working till 12, and then, yeah, drink it through.
So you're good. My daughters are so good because that's all they drink. But I drink tea. I drink pop. I drink a lot of pop. I drink more pop. Occasionally beer, occasionally wine.
Yeah, it's just
tough to fit the water in around
all
that.
The beer and the wine is a diuretic, and that's usually the point. That's usually my problem when it comes to water. And I know – it's like I know when I have not had enough water because I feel like, crap, I should have had a lot more water than I did before because I got a headache and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, you do feel the headaches for sure. And you notice it. But, older people say just drink when you're thirsty, and it seems to work okay for them. I mean, they've been doing that for years and years. So I don't know, John Krupe, what do you think?
What is it, like
30, as an older person, what do you think?
Thank you. You remember 30, 35 years ago, coffee was bad for you? And now every time I flip on some medical news, drink coffee. It's good for you. It's good for your heart. And remember, 8 glasses a day. And now I'm seeing all these stories. Drink what you can. Obviously, you want to be hydrated. And drink the, make sure you're hydrated with the proper drinks. What are they called? Those drinks that have those.
Calories?
Yes.
Sugar?
Yeah. Anyway, like Gatorade.
Electrolytes.
Electrolytes. Thank you.
I mean, a lot of people that I know who cycle, no names will be mentioned, swear that beer rehydrates them after they cycle.
Oh, sure.
I don't know if that's true. For me, it's the ice cubes and the Diet Coke.
Beer also, 100% with the carbohydrates and the sodium in it is a good replenishment.
It replenishes.
Oh, a lot of nutritionists recommend it, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I have the name and number of that nutritionist?
I'll send you some.
Get a diet plan. I always hope that the ice in the Diet Coke melts in time, that I get a little bit of water when I'm drinking it.
The amount of sugar
in
some of these drinks, though, holy mackerel.
I love sugar.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Sugar's bad.
Love the beer, too. 9:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. You may have been drinking some beer watching Croatia play Canada if you were not over there, but over here. You could have been doing that. We are going to break that down. What went wrong in that game as Canada's knocked out of the World Cup? Gordon Smith, soccer analyst from TSN 1200, will join us right after the break. We have lots on the Christmas market. So beautiful out there at Lansdowne this weekend. People packing that. We have our Music Monday today. Lots more coming up here on News Talk 580 CFRA. Chris Holsky standing by with your news headlines. John Krupe, thank you very much. We'll talk to you in a bit. Go have a glass of water. 9:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Auto at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
This is News Talk 580 on News Talk 580 CFRA.
9:30. 9:35 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Our question of the day today: do you agree with the city staff decision to install fencing this winter to prevent kids and families from sledding at Mooney's Bay Park, closing down the Tobogganing Hill after an 11-year-old girl died in an accident at that hill last year? Do you think closing it down is the only solution, or should the city be looking at other options? Let us know what you think. 580-580, that is our question of the day. Do you agree with the decision to close down the Tobogganing Hill at Mooney's Bay? I am worried about it.
Ottawa at Work continues with Patricia Bowl.
Buchanan with the cross in towards Alphonso Davies! He missed the penalty in the opener. He makes amends today. Canada's history-making moment delivered by their biggest superstar. A goal the country has been dreaming about for decades.
A beautiful, beautiful moment in the beautiful game. On Sunday morning, all was looking good for Canada. Canadian fans super stoked to see Canada score the first ever goal at the World Cup off the head of Alphonso Davies, no less, Canada's premier player. But unfortunately, the golden sheen off the day, the rest of the day, was not to be. Gordon Smith joins us, soccer analyst for TSN 1200. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Patricia. How are you?
The highs and lows of sports. I am very well, thank you. But it was a tough one because, of course, there was a lot of expectation going into this World Cup that Canada would not move out of this first round, this opening group stage, that it would really, really be a tough, tough uphill battle. But they looked so good against Belgium. They played so well. There was so much what could have been, what should have been. If only they'd scored on that penalty kick, it might have been a draw and well-placed. And I think the hopes were still huge going into that game against Croatia. And with that goal early, grew even bigger momentarily before deflating. What do you make of what we saw on Sunday?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right with regards to the Belgium game. That was the one, really, that I think most of us are disappointed about, because we played so well, we put so much into it. And in the end, we came out with, well, basically the same as what we came out with against Croatia, 0 points. We came out with a good reputation as a sort of free-flowing, attacking football team that, you know, was willing to take risks in the opposition half. And it just didn't go for us against Belgium. Yesterday, of course, we had the euphoria of the goal after 6 to 8 seconds. And, you know, a lot of us thinking that, you know, a huge upset was possible, but I think once the Croatians got into their style of play and settled down themselves, there was only going to be one winner. And when you're a quality team, a quality country like Croatia is on the football pitch, it was going to be an uphill battle for Canada, irrespective of us getting that first goal.
What was it about Croatia's style that made them maybe a little bit tougher to play for Canada?
Well, just certainly that the midfield area of the park, which is always crucial. And you know, the way, you know, Coach Herdman had set up, we more or less just had two players in midfield against their three. And any time you've got that numerical advantage, it's going to be good for you. But when you've got the quality of the players they also have in that midfield triangle, it just makes it so difficult. And unfortunately, I think, you know, that just kind of went against them, whether it was tactics, whether it was personnel or the players that you picked on the day. Doesn't matter. I mean, Croatia are one of the top teams in the world. And I think, you know, when you look at the fact that Belgium came in as number 2 and Croatia come in as number 12 in the FIFA rankings at this World Cup, you know, you look at it and you think maybe it should be the other way around, because The way things have gone for Belgium, it just isn't looking good for them at the moment. They may go ahead and surprise everyone come Thursday and defeat Croatia and move on, but it would take a far better effort than they've had in the first two games, that's for sure.
What do you make of the conversation around the idea that maybe Canada inadvertently fired up Croatia, and that Coach John Herdman was pretty excited by the way his team played after that Belgium game, reacted in the moment and made the comments about how Canada was going to F Croatia, or I can't remember exactly what he said. Yeah.
That's pretty much exactly what you said.
And the Croatian tabloids had an absolute field day with that. Some really, really funny stuff that came out of that. And then Herdman had to sort of address that and said, you know, his wife's telling him he needs to work out before he comes home, because they had that great picture of his skinny little body saying he's got the mouth, but does he have the, you know what?
Yep.
Did that do anything? I mean, you hear about that in other sports all the time. These are two teams that haven't played on this stage before, and immediately somehow there's history between them going out there.
I don't think there's any maybe about it. I mean, in the post-match conference that we heard from one of the players of Croatia, pretty much said exactly that. I said, thank you very much to the Canadian coach for giving us the motivation. So, I mean, basically since last week when the comments were made, and personally, I don't think, you know, you look at it, I don't think there was any slight intended to Croatia. I think he shouldn't have said them. Of that, there's no doubt. Certainly in retrospect, he shouldn't have said them. But I just think it was in a heat of the moment thing, and the cameras in social media, and the cameras are right down there on the field. I think it was something that privately was said to his team in the huddle. But unfortunately, I believe it was picked up on the microphone. And then he doubled down in his own post-match interview and repeated it and said it again. So that more or less just opened him up for criticism. Now, was he trying to possibly deflect away from the loss or the penalty kick miss? We'll never know. But the fact is that it's not like he's a rookie at this level. I mean, he's coached Canada's women's team at World Cups, and he knows the last thing you want to do is provide any further motivation to your opposition, bulletin board material, so to speak. And unfortunately, that's exactly what he did. Croatia was seething on this as a country, as a team for 4 days until yesterday. And when the chance came, they just put the foot right on the throat of Canada. And there was no mercy, finishing up at 4-1.
Well, experience on that stage or not, sometimes we just get caught up in the moment, as lot of Canadians did when that goal was scored yesterday. And now there's the conversation today. Why do we make so much of one goal? We don't have a win at this World Cup. It's just a goal. But really not just a goal, coming decades as it does after Canada's last appearance in the World Cup in 1986, where they did not score. To actually have that out of the way, maybe that frees them up to play a little bit differently against Morocco. But it is a big deal, and it's pretty cool that it's Alphonso Davies' name that gets etched into those history books.
I think you're right. I think the fact that Davies was the goal scorer, and it was a terrific goal all round. I mean, a wonderful ball played in from a wide position, and Davies flying in. Now, when you see the sort of wide picture, I mean, he must have made up about 15 yards on the defender to get in front of him to get that powerful header. But, you know, when you come into these type of tournaments after having been out for so long, 36 years, you set yourself goals. You set stages to compete. And obviously the first one was, you know, get that first goal. Then the next one is going to be get that first point. Then the next one is going to be get that first win. So we've accomplished the first stage. Let's go into Thursday's game, hopefully a bit more relaxed. We can possibly change the team up a little bit, maybe get some fresh legs in there, give some of the lads that have played 180 minutes, 180 tough minutes, or 90 minutes, or whatever minutes they've played. Mm-hmm. Just give them a rest and get some of your bench lads in there, get them the experience so that they can, you know, put that in their back pocket for 2026 when we're actually hosting the World Cup along with the USA and Mexico.
We get to do this all again.
It
has been highly entertaining. It has been a lot of fun. And I, for one, look forward to watching these guys again one more time on Thursday against Morocco. Gordon, thank you so much for your time again this morning. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Gordon Smith is our soccer analyst on TSN 1200. Coming up to 9:49 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Lots of responses coming in to our question of the day at 580-580, do you agree with the city's decision to close down the Tobogganing Hill at Mooney's Bay? We'll go through some of those coming up in just a moment. As well, we have John Heckbert coming on. Operation Come Home sounding the alarm about the dire need out there for affordable housing. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull. We are in the darkest days of November right now. I had to drive to Kingston yesterday afternoon, trying to squeeze it in before it got dark, you know, leaving around 3. It was pretty much pitch black by 4:30. That time of year when you can feel winter coming on, even though the temperatures are still a little bit mild out there. It's a tough time for anyone living out there on the streets. You can just imagine. We have talked to the Ottawa Mission quite a bit about the demand that they are seeing for meals this year that is sky high. Another organization that is seeing all kinds of pressure this year is Operation Come Home, and particularly in the area of trying to find housing for some of those youth that are affected by that situation right now. The mission statement, the vision statement here for Operation Come Home is to prevent homeless youth from becoming homeless adults. And I think that task is proving to be much more difficult right now than at any other time. John Heckbert is executive director of Operation Come Home, joins us now. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Why is it so tough out there right now?
Well, the numbers have just exploded. For us, we're seeing a 33% increase in the number of youth that are coming to access our services versus what we forecast for the year. And, you know, we expected to serve 525 youth here downtown for the full 2022, in keeping with last year's numbers. We're on track to exceed 700 right now in terms of total number of youth served. So there's definitely a lot of volume, a lot of young people out there that are seeking help right now.
I mean, we heard a lot of talk about affordable housing during the election campaign. It seemed to be an issue that seemed to get a lot of talk, a lot of traction. But is there actually any action happening around affordable housing right now?
Well, there's definitely projects coming online that we're watching here in Ottawa. I've spoken to a couple of developers because we're interested, of course, in helping ensure that some units and some new apartment buildings can be set aside for our youth. So we're kind of trying to be proactive on it. So there is some movement, but a lot of it, of course, as you can imagine, isn't helping with short-term relief. And unfortunately, this is an abnormal year. I'm not an economist. I don't have an expertise in that. But I do feel that inflation and a lot of the cost of living increases that we've seen over the last year have really impacted people on the, you know, in the lower income categories the most. And there's a lot of competition right now for affordable units in downtown Ottawa. I think the vacancy rate is 0.4% right now, so effectively zero for the types of apartments that we would try to help youth, you know, secure for themselves. And that's, you know, way worse than it was last year for sure.
We see these average rent numbers that are so high right across the country. And look at some of the numbers that have been flagged here. A single person receiving $672 a month via the Ontario Disability Support Program would be able to afford what in rent? Almost nothing.
Yeah, they definitely wouldn't be able to afford a single bachelor apartment right now. That's for sure. We're expecting between $1,200 and $1,600 in average monthly rent for some of our youth, right? And, you know, there are other options that sometimes can be floated, like, you know, group living situations and that sort of thing. But those are also very hard to find. You know, a lot of people that were experiencing hardship before 2022, when inflation started to happen, they started to look for cheaper apartments, cheaper places to live. And those were, you know, traditional working people. So people that are experiencing homelessness, like our youth, you know, they're competing for the same units, the most affordable units, as everybody else that's trying to seek some relief. So definitely a lot of pressure.
When you, some of the programming that you do when you host these drop-in programs on weekday mornings and whatnot, what kind of hopelessness are you hearing about? What are people facing? What are they feeling when they look at some of these numbers and it looks so difficult to escape where they're at?
Yeah, hope is really it. We do try to keep their motivation up, and we try to make sure that we can help them as best we can with the resources we have both here at OCH and in the community, right? Just anecdotally, my office is right in front of the front door. I have a window that looks out at everybody that comes in the building, and I think that, you know, there's certainly more youth that are coming in with all of their things, you know, in bags and whatnot. That seems to have picked up from last year. So it's heartbreaking when you see that because, of course, you know they got nowhere else to go. We run a reunite program since we were founded 51 years ago where we try to reunite youth with their families. In some cases, that's not possible. If they came out of foster care or if they've left a situation that was unsafe for them, and of course, there isn't really a family connection that we can make. But for all others, you know, we can try to reconcile youth with their families or whatever. We'll absolutely do that. You know, like I said, try to creatively find solutions here in town to find housing for them. Shelter system is particularly tough. The youth shelters are at capacity. The adult shelters are often at capacity. Sometimes people are sleeping in like dormitory style rooms in church basements. And, you know, you have to love the church communities here downtown that are helping do what they can. But, you know, it's not a comfortable or safe place for many of our youth to be. And if some of them are 16 or 17 years old, it's really not safe because they're at greater risk. So, yeah, so we're working as best we can, but it's tough to keep their spirits up, especially as the weather gets colder.
Appreciate the churches that are helping, appreciate the organizations that are helping, and appreciate what you do. John, thank you so much for shining a bit of light on this today.
Thank you for having me.
John Heckbert is the executive director of Operation Come Home, where they say demand for services up 33% over last year. 10:01 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, more on that tobogganing hill at Mooney's Bay. That is our question of the day. Do you agree with the decision to close it down?
You are listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bold.
10:10 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. Our question of the day today, do you agree with a city decision to close the tobogganing hill at Mooney's Bay to keep kids safe? The decision coming nearly a year after an 11-year-old girl died in a tobogganing accident on that hill. We'd like to know your thoughts. We do know that Councillor Riley Brockington, who is the councillor for the area, does not like this choice. He's speaking out after this decision from city staff to install fencing this winter to prevent kids, prevent families from sledding at Mooney's Bay Park. It's a decision that came down from the city in a memo on Friday, nearly a year after 11-year-old Josiah B. Asai died. She died in an incident last December. Very, very tragic, very sad. Her family took the time shortly after to speak with us at CTV Ottawa. It was one of the most emotional stories I think we've done. You know, you just have kids who are out wanting to have a fun day on the hill. They were fairly new to Canada. They were doing something different and fun close to the cousin's home. And for an 11-year-old to die that way, absolutely, absolutely tragic. There's no question. Heartbreaking. But then the question now is the best or only response to then close off a hill that for decades has been enjoyed by families and kids because of one incident that went tragically wrong? Now, Brockington, critical of the city's response, saying staff took no responsibility for last year's fatal accident. He wrote in a statement, "The tragedy at Mooney's Bay last December 27th that took the life of 11-year-old Jose was completely preventable." He noted in a phone call to CTV News that she had hit a post that it appears city crews had forgotten to remove that winter. So now the fence goes up. People are prevented from sledding. Riley Brockington spoke this morning on The Morning Rush. He says, "Many people in the city do use that hill every year for recreation and sports in the winter.
People have been tobogganing, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, all types of winter activities here in the park for decades. And so there are issues, inherent issues with tobogganing. The overwhelming response by the public, both when the tragic accident happened last December and more recently with the news on Friday, late Friday afternoon, that this is the direction the city's going in, was opposed to plans to cordon off or fence off the hill."
And that is the response that I'm hearing from you this morning as well. 580, 580 for your text messages on that. We'll get to some of that in just a moment. Riley says there are other examples in the city of solutions to tobogganing safety that are not that extreme, that don't involve totally closing off a hill.
Yeah, and you see this other places, the Arboretum, which the federal government looks after, basically does the same things. There's, you know, parts of their hill would have trees like many other hills, and they wrap those. So precautions are taken.
He says that this may be a lawyer's solution, right? To keep the city safe from any potential lawsuits or lawyers saying this is the best option to be completely safe. God forbid something like this would ever happen again. Now, Brockington says he is open to the idea of only keeping part of the hill open, making it safe being the most important thing.
Identified, how do you make this hill safe or safer? Maybe you don't use all the slopes. Maybe you just focus on that north-facing slope, the shortest one, seems like the safest side. What does the city need to do to bring that up to a certain level where the city's confident that they can make it a sanctioned site and open to the public? That's where I want to focus on.
And again, this is Councillor Riley Brockington, who was speaking with Bill Carroll this morning. He's the councillor for the area that includes that hill at Moonies Bay. He said he does remain optimistic, hopes we can find a compromise to keep the hill open.
And the expectations of the public is that this site will be remaining open. So let's put our heads together, find out what we need to do to make it safer and keep this open for the people of Ottawa.
That is Riley Brockington, who's speaking with Bill Carroll this morning. Our question of the day, 580-580, do you think that is the only solution, closing down the hill to keep kids safe? And so far, everyone I'm hearing from this morning says, no. Here's some of your responses. Re-question of the day. Absolutely ridiculous. Let people be and stop trying to control every aspect of their lives. Everything in life has a risk. Someone else texting in this morning. Keep the sliding hill open. A tragic event, yes, but an overreaction. Someone else, I do not agree. It is overreaction, but it's the easiest thing to do, which is why they did it. That's from Ivan. Someone else texting, just like you don't shut down all roads when a car gets into a collision, same as snow hills. And good morning, Patricia. I think that it is overkill to close down the toboggan hill. Put things in place to prevent a tragedy if possible, but we see it on the ski hills as well, and they don't close down the ski hills. Let's give kids the opportunity to have fun this winter. That's from Kathy. What do you think? Do you have any different thoughts? Do any of you believe that that hill needs to be closed off, that that's the only solution? Let us know. 580-580. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
Hold me close, I'm trying to dance. Count the headlights on the highway.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
Ten 20 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good Monday morning to you. For me, it's the Monday after Canada lost to Croatia and got eliminated at World Cup. It's the Monday after the Senators scored in overtime. Beautiful goal by Claude Giroux to beat the Los Angeles Kings. For a lot of people, it's the Monday after Black Friday, which means it's Cyber Monday, which means it's a day to shop, to get online, to look for deals. And it's really interesting now because, you know, they used to say that this was, well, first of all, Black Friday, of course, used to be just an American phenomenon, coming the day after Thanksgiving. A lot of people had the day off. They would go shopping. Kind of made sense to start your Christmas shopping around that time of year, end of November. And then that has moved northward. We are as big into the Black Friday shopping as almost anyone. A lot of people make it a short week, take the Friday off or hit the stores, or they start getting online. And then Monday, those deals are really supposed to pump up online. But now you have experts saying, you know what, the whole thing, instead of just being a weekend, is now kind of a season. It's the Black Friday season, the Cyber Monday season. And there's all kinds of deals out there. I'm doing a trip in the winter. So there were Black Friday deals on some of the excursions, like it's a cruise. So there's excursions that are associated with the cruise, which I can't afford. I can't afford any of them. And you go into the cruise saying, we're not going to do anything extra. I'm going with my son. So I'm telling him, that's it. It's just the cruise. And then, like, but other people are doing this and this is happening. And then there's these deals where you could get them 50% off. So I did look at that while those discounts were in place. But I'm terrible about actually getting my stuff together in time to actually take advantage of some of these really good deals early, because I'm not even in shopping mode until mid-December. But there are some deals out there. There are tons of stories right now that are bringing you the very best deals in tech and in kitchen gadgets and whatnot that you can jump on. I will think about this in a couple of weeks. Like last year, we were trying to find an Xbox system for my son and got into that mode after they'd all been bought and all the deals were, and you couldn't even get them anymore. Mitch and Chris are here. Mitch is helping us out producing today. Are you good at this? Do you get on there in good time and actually take advantage of the deals? Or are you like me? Do you wait, procrastinate, and then jump out and pay full price on December 23rd?
Oftentimes, I'm a Christmas Eve shopper, but the last couple of years, I've kind of come around on Cyber Monday because it makes sense. It's close enough to Christmas that you can get some incredible deals. And so I've been doing that, and I've got just like some astonishing deals, like speakers for like 50% off. I mean, you just kind of have to know where to look and just be persistent about it and find them, and you will find some incredible deals.
Yeah, some really good. I love some of the shoppers that we spoke to on CTV Ottawa at Tanger Outlets on Friday. There were some women who had their whole lists and their bags, and they were organized in the carts, and then they were in line telling, I think it was Dave Charbonneau that did the story, if I remember correctly, or Tyler, saying, you know, 30% off, not even going to attract our attention. We're not even going to turn our heads for 30% off. Like, we're here for the 50 or 60% off deals. They want the really serious deals, which actually makes it worthwhile to be organized ahead of time, Chris, if you're getting those kind of deals. But I think you're more like me, right?
I'm a lot like you.
It's all passing you by.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, right? Like, I don't have like an hour or two to scrounge together to even hop online
So what you need is, you need your employer to give you more time to get online.
Yes.
Spend money. Yeah.
That's
like,
what I'm
like
saying.
Like how we get that time to vote. Every day there should be
right,
an hour
there should be, right?
Get online and take care of that stuff.
Taking care of the economy.
But
right?
Who is it in your family? Because when you have kids, usually one person does more of the sort of shopping and organizing pre-Christmas than the other.
That would be my wife, yes.
It would be your wife, okay.
Yeah, no. But it's trying to find something for my wife. Right. That's always the big
one.
Thing. Right. Like,
yeah.
She's like, don't go too big. And you're like, OK,
right. You have a shared budget. So you don't want your spouse to go too crazy. But at the same time, you know, something that you'd really like.
Yeah, we're going to have to remortgage. We're going to have to remortgage the house.
Or just get her a house.
Or get her a house. Another one. Right.
Big trip.
Yeah.
A car. Okay, do you want our help on this? Do you want us to help you find some deals?
Oh, man. I really don't know where to start. She's fairly practical. You know, she's like wants small little things, whether it's like, I don't know, like just stuff for her hair, stuff,
right.
You know, like socks.
The kind of nice stuff that you don't want to spend the extra on sometimes. That's just pampering yourself.
It makes it easier for me, but it makes it like a little, like, I don't know. I feel a little guilty. I'm like, okay, here are some socks.
I used to hate getting warm feet. You did. I love socks because for some reason, all of our socks get split up. They don't like each other in our house. They don't want to live or travel in pairs. So I end up having all these individual socks. Mm. So I always feel like I need more socks. And I like getting new cozy socks.
The older I get, the more I appreciate socks.
Yeah. Once you're buying your own socks. But I have to say for me, like, I'm not really about stuff. The house just gets full of stuff and junk. I love the experience gift. So if someone's going to say, you know, I'm buying you a dinner or Nordic Spa. I'm getting paid to sponsor them. Something like that where they're
right.
Like, and I will go with you and we'll do something and I'll get you wine or someone else has been booked to look after the kids. So we're going to do this. And you kind of have the whole experience or date planned out. That's the kind of stuff that I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. And then I try to give those gifts as well so that I can then gift myself. Like I can get in on it. So I'll give the kids like something that relates to a trip as part of their gift, because then I can actually enjoy it with them.
Hey, sweetie, we're going to Le Spa Nordique. Well, you are, but there's this other pass if, you know.
Or you say, I'm going to stay with the kids and you can take friend or do whatever.
Right.
Or a musical at the NAC, Come From Away, is going to be here right after Christmas.
I'm going to see that.
Are you?
Yeah, my girlfriend and I got tickets. I got it for her birthday. So I'm looking forward to that.
If you only see one musical in your lifetime, I think Hamilton might be the best musical I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Les Mis was my favorite for years. But if you are actually only going to see one and you're not necessarily a huge fan of the musical genre, but you are a Canadian or you live in New York, I think Come From Away is the musical that is going to touch you more than any other possible show you will see on that NAC stage.
That documentary about just you know, what caught, what was the inspiration for this play. It was pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
It was on Crave, and you could probably still catch it on Crave.
Yeah, it just incredible, the true story of what was happening in Gander, Newfoundland on 9/11. And the way that community stepped up, such a small community, to accommodate thousands of people who suddenly were there, stuck after the planes were ordered to land to clear the airspace because of potential terrorist threats after what was going on in New York and elsewhere on 9/11. And the way that community stepped up. And I did that interview, when was it? Preseason, when the Senators were in Gander and had a chance to speak with their mayor there about the game that was going to be played between the Leafs and Habs, the preseason game. And it turned out he was deputy mayor at the time in Gander. And he was talking about the arena that the game was being played at was the same arena that they had shown the musical just a few weeks before. And so we started talking about that period of time and realized that he was, in fact, deputy mayor on that day. And, you know, he said he was told that what we did at that time, I would like to think is what any community would do. But I'm told by others that that's not necessarily the case. And it was an absolutely beautiful, extraordinary thing that happened. And the way this story is told when you go to see this musical, Mitch, is just it's so pared down, very few sets. It's a few chairs on the stage, and it's people doing dual roles when they are portraying the people who are in the planes and the people who are down on the ground. And it's beautiful and it's fun, and it strikes a chord for, I think, all Canadians. But if you have any ties to Newfoundland in particular, and I was back there a lot, back and forth when my daughter was going to school there, I guarantee it's going to make you cry at some point. And it's going to take you by surprise because you'll be having fun in the middle of this musical, and then there'll just be a moment and it just gets you. If you live through 9/11 from anywhere and watch what was unfolding on that day, it will for sure bring you to tears. So I love that you're going. So there's a gift that would keep on giving for years in terms of memory.
Thank you. Noted.
Or you could get a juice maker or something like that.
Lots of deals to be had.
Cyber Monday. Let us know if you're checking out deals out there, if you're a big shopper. What should we be looking at? Love to hear suggestions from you. 10:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, it's Monday, which means Music Monday. Eric Alper will be here. Stick around. I've been a throw up the sex in a. And I can put you in.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
Okay, I love this. Chris, you're going to appreciate this. This morning, 10:36 on News Talk 580 CFRA. So we were just chatting and there were two people in here with me. Well, Chris is on the other side of the glass here keeping me organized, and Mitch is helping to produce for us this morning. So we were talking about Christmas shopping, and then someone just texted in and said, he just said his wife does the Christmas shopping, and then he carried on and said his girlfriend got tickets to go see Come From Away. So someone thinks you're living a pretty good life there, Chris, but we're just going to clarify that that was, in fact, two different people. So your wife does most of the Christmas shopping for the kids.
Yes.
And Mitch's girlfriend got tickets for him to go see Come From Away. Your voices probably sound similar.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I could go an octave or two higher there.
Yeah, well, you might have to when your wife gets a hold of you.
Once you find out I have
your girlfriend is taking you to the NAC for an experience Christmas gift. Yeah.
Hey, boy.
Love it. Yeah, that show, by the way, if I was organized, I'd have this right in front of me because I was just looking at this email. But that show is coming up in December. I'm looking at the December 27th to January 8th, so it is right after Christmas. We hopefully will talk to some of the cast maybe before Christmas to get you psyched for that. But it is an incredible show. I do highly recommend. It's exactly when I have that vacation plan, so I don't think I get to go see Come From Away again this time this year. So you can be sad for me that I'm going away on vacation and I have to miss that. But I hope all of you who are going do enjoy it. It is 10:38 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We want to talk music with Eric Alper, who is here just by himself, I think, right? Eric, you don't have your wife and girlfriend and everyone else with you today, right?
No, but I have the entire province of Nova Scotia here, and they keep singing Welcome to the Rock, and so I don't exactly know what to feed them at this point.
What is going on? Okay, we want to talk about B-sides that became hits today, and this is an interesting category. So for all of our younger listeners out there, a B-side is what used to be on the other side of the record that had the single that was going to be the hit that was on the A-side, right? Am I explaining that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. And a record was, you know, made up of
the disc and
of a vinyl substance that actually had. You actually had to go to a record store, and a record store was a place that had records, and you actually paid for it with cash. And cash was paper money that people used to use in order to exchange it to buy these goods. And that's your little history lesson for the 1970s and 80s.
And then you had to store the records in something, and you had a huge record collection, and then you weren't supposed to buy any more music, because everyone could see how much space it was taking up, because obviously you had a problem. I mean, life was hard back then, but the music sounded really good. Okay, B-sides that became hits. We're going to start right at the top here with Beth by Kiss. And we just can't find the sound. Just a few more hours, and I'll be right home to you. I think I hear them calling. Oh, Beth, what can I do? Ah, beautiful, beautiful song, and it was on the B-side.
Yeah, this is on the B-side to Detroit Rock City, and the drummer, Peter Criss, actually wrote this song before he was in Kiss. He was in another band called Chelsea, and he wrote this song mocking his guitarist's wife, who would always call during rehearsals saying, "When are you going to come home? When are you going to come home? It's so late." And so he wrote this song, but in a very mocking tone. And, you know, when he was in Kiss, he gave it to the band. The band didn't want to do it because their songs was about sex, not love. And he gave it to the producer, Bob Ezrin, who's a Canadian, who said, well, maybe you should just slow it down a little bit and make it into a love song. And they stuck it on the B-side, and it wasn't until a Windsor station actually decided to flip it over because they were lacking of ballads in the rock era, and that song became, you know, just a monster hit for them.
Is it a love song when it's the wife who's calling to see when you're coming home, and it's about sex when it's the girlfriend calling to see when you're coming home?
Or the groupie, yeah.
The groupie. All right, the next B-side, Black Water by the Doobie Brothers. Black water, keep on rolling, Mississippi, won't you keep on shining? It's like, how did they not know that this was going to be a hit, right?
Yeah, because sometimes you just don't know. Like, you're so close to the song. Maybe, you know, songs like these took forever to get it right into the studio. But this was the B-side of a song called Another Park, Another Sunday, which was a little bit of a hit. But there was a station in Rockne, Virginia, that started playing Black Water off of the album Once Were Vices, and Black Water was a 25-minute drive from the station. So they decided, just as a goof, to start playing this song and pretending that the song was really about them. That's where it all became a hit, and then it went from city to city to city, becoming, you know, it was like their second number one that month.
When did we stop having A-sides and B-sides? Because Green Day is like a fairly modern musical group, but we're about to talk about a B-side by them.
Yeah, you know, this was back in 1996, so it wasn't necessarily on a vinyl single, but it was definitely on a cassette single, and then the CD single still had the A-side, but song number two was still considered the B-side, or a remix was, you know, the third song of it, but they still had the concept of the A-side, B-side.
Okay.
I still, as a publicist, release double A-sides or A-side, B-sides. It's just kind of a throwback to the era, even though everything is still digital. But this is a short form for releasing two songs at once.
All right, as long as we stay on your good side, and this is Good Riddance. Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Done grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go.
Time of your life.
That's the name of that song?
Yeah, Good Riddance.
I thought it was Time of Your Life. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Billy Joe Armstrong wrote this song about his girlfriend named Amanda who moved to Ecuador, and he just wrote this scathing song, but it's supposed to be sarcastic, like, I hope you have the time of your life over there, but it turned into a whole bunch of teenagers of the era completely missing the whole sarcasticness of the song and the lyrics, and became one of the most popular prom songs of all time.
Played at graduations.
I hope you have the time of your life, kids. And so that has to be right up there with Every Breath You Take by The Police. It's just songs that just don't mean what you think it means.
Yeah, for sure. The Stalker song. Okay, this is, when I think of Rod Stewart, this is probably the song I think of first. This is Maggie May. Wake up, Maggie, I think I got something to say to you. It's late September and I really should be back at school. I know I keep you amused, but I feel I'm being used. Oh, Maggie, I couldn't have tried anymore. I don't know if this song's even legal, but it's a good one.
Yeah, this was the B-side to a cover of Tom Hardin's Reason to Believe, and he loved this song. Rod Stewart loved Maggie May because it was one of these oral traditional songs that have gone through generations, and he just kind of put his own little spin on it and updated the lyrics, but it was stuck to the B-side against his wishes. The record label thought that Reason to Believe was a hit. Rod Stewart thought Maggie May was a hit, and it took a DJ in America to flip over the single, made Maggie May a hit, and Rod Stewart never listened to a record label after that.
No, why would he? He had reason to believe that he knew what he was doing. So
exactly.
All right, this is number five. This was a huge, huge hit. This is Rock Around the Clock.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on.
Makes me feel like I know how to dance a certain kind of way that I don't, but makes me want to move. I mean, this is just fun, and this was huge at dances back in, what, the 50s?
Yeah, and still today. It's still played in weddings and events whenever they have older people, but this was released back in 1954 to a B-side called 13 Women and Only One Man in Town, and the DJ had flipped it over. It was in a movie called Blackboard Jungle that really helped bring rock and roll to the masses because all the teenagers went to the movies, and when they saw this film of people dancing, that was it. They started riots in the theaters. They just didn't know what to do with themselves after seeing this movie, and so that song became the first real rock and roll song to top the Billboard pop charts.
And it by, I want to say Bill Haley and the Comets, but is it actually Bill Haley and his Comets?
It's Bill Haley and his Comets.
How did I not know that?
Yeah, I know. It's like Bernstein Bears. Like sometimes it's Bernstein Bears, but it was never Bernstein Bears. It's always Bernstein.
Isn't it Berenstein?
No.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, but how you pronounce it is, yeah, very strange.
Okay. Learn something new every day. Because we have the A-team here talking about B-sides. We're going to take a quick break. We got more hits that might never have been when we come back. It's 10:47.
Come see what we're doing at pathwaysalliance.ca.
You are listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
10:53 on News Talk 580 CFRA. It is a Music Monday. We hope you got you bouncing in the seat of your car or at home, wherever you are this morning, listening to Eric Alper, our music expert and publicist. And we're talking about the B-side today, Eric. We are talking about those hits that might not have been.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and sometimes it's just chalking up to the fact that sometimes, you know, these bands are just too close to the songs and they just don't know really what they have until they're actually kind of sitting on it.
And sometimes that's the sweetest thing, as this one is, by U2. Milo, she throws me. I mean, this is a good song, but this is actually a B-side to a massive, massive hit.
Yeah, this was a B-side to Where the Streets Have No Name back in 1987. And it's one of those rare cases where it took a little bit of time for this song to actually come out again, even though that U2 kind of cheated to get on this list, because they actually released this as a single. Bono wrote this song because he was spending way too much time in the studio during the recording of the Joshua Tree album. And his wife, Ali Hewson, who he'd been still married to her since 1981, got really upset and missed her birthday. So he wrote the song as a form of apology. And then a number of years after the song came out, they decided to release it as a single to help promote their greatest hits album.
They're just like us in so many ways, aren't they?
They're just like us. You know what? We all write number one pop songs whenever our partner gets mad at us.
Yeah, why buy flowers when you can do it that way? Okay, this next one is Unchained Melody. Okay, that was in the movie Ghost, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in the movie Ghost. And it was originally recorded back in 1965 at the B-side to a song called Hung On You. But then, you know, thanks to another DJ, the track reached number four in the U.S. and number one when they flipped over, and then became another hit 30 years later after appearing in the movie Ghost.
So, so beautiful, that song. Stays with you for sure. Okay, here's a big one from the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want.
You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, well, you might find you get what you need.
This is philosophy from the Rolling Stones, right? This is life lessons for a lot of us. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you might just find.
You get what you need, especially when it was the B-side to Honky Tonk Women. This was this was one of those cases where, even though the Honky Tonk Women sold a lot and You Can't Always Get What You Want was playing in shows, it was a number of years before the Rolling Stones actually took a break. So the record label just decided to throw something out there to see what hit. And then back in 1973, they sent it out to radio again, and it became a massive song.
All right, these next two, I'm not actually totally sure if I know. But I imagine I will when I hear them. So let's do it. This is Pearl Jam. Yellow Ledbetter?
Yellow Ledbetter. It's one of the most classic songs in Pearl Jam's history. It became a hit after the B-side of Jeremy during the 10 album back in the early 1990s. But it became a hit after it was after the song appeared in the TV show Friends, when Jennifer Aniston's character was about to board a plane to Paris, leaving Ross all alone. And so they decided to send it back out to radio, and it became a monster hit afterwards.
Now you're talking my language. So this was released originally when?
It was originally released back in 1991.
91, okay. Yeah, yeah. For some reason it's not that familiar to me, and yet it's a big hit by Pearl Jam and associated with Friends. I should know it. All right, I'm going to listen in its entirety afterwards. Okay, and our last one that we want to talk about, last big B-side hit, Silver Springs by Fleetwood Mac. What's the story behind this one?
So this was the B-side to Go Your Own Way back in 1977, and with very good reason. It was supposed to be found on the Rumours album, but it was cut due to the space limitations of vinyl. But in 2002, it appeared on the extended version and became a hit after that. And it's a song that Stevie Nicks specifically wrote for her anger and hatred at Lindsey Buckingham, and used to look at him every single time she sung this song directly to his face, which probably a little bit of, you know, theatrical, but I get the feeling like, you know, if you read the lyrics, it's really scathing. So, you know, let's end off this list with a heartbreaking song.
Heartbreaking song, scathing lyrics.
On to their day. It's Monday. What else are you going to do?
Right. And it's better that we end that way than have you go through why every day of the week is worse than the next, because we've been there. But I think this is good. Life lessons. Don't always judge a book by its cover, and don't assume that the A side is necessarily better than the B side. Appreciate it, Eric. Lots of fun.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. We'll talk soon.
Eric Elper, our music expert and publicist. That was another edition of Music Monday. Quick break for the news headlines. When we come back, CTV Ottawa's Graham Richardson will be here.
Ottawa at Work continues with Patricia Bowl.
On News Talk 580 CFRA. Sorry, I'm trying to eat my candy rockets here, and they're a little bit tangy.
Rockets.
I still have leftover from the full bag of rockets that I bought before Halloween to make sure I would actually have rockets at Halloween. And then I've just been bringing in one or two packs a day and eating them.
Yeah. You didn't give them out. They're for your own supply to make sure.
Occasionally, if I really, really like someone, I've given them out. Not very often.
You're a big rocket. Oh,
you mean gave them out at Halloween? No, yes. I didn't do that. I thought you meant here in the newsroom.
Yes.
Or in the studio. Because there's only, I wanted to say 30 calories a pack, but now I feel like I might be underestimating. There's not as many calories as in a chocolate bar.
When you're eating candy, like I bought sour Jujubes yesterday at Farm Boy. It's just like, it's a big weakness. Like, it's just like, oh, I'll have two or three. No, you won't. You'll almost eat the whole bag.
It can happen. You know who it's a big, big weakness for, apparently?
Who?
My dogs.
They like
they got
sour
into
jujubes?
A box of some kind of jujube
thing
on the weekend. This was a disaster.
I bet.
It took one packet, so they were in the little packets inside the box. It took one packet away from one dog, and then my son said, oh, we saw the other dog with a packet because this box got left down. And then we went into
party.
The witching hours overnight, and then the next morning,
barf.
I woke up to a vomitorium.
Oh,
and obviously they were not taking those candies out of the wrapper at any point. They were just eating the packet.
Oh, with the retrievers! They get one scent and they're just like, "Let's go party time."
They were good for a while until the older one got pizza the first time, and then it was only when we had pizza, you had to watch because he'd just wait for you to turn.
And he'd jump up and get it off the counter.
Off the table initially before we knew this was a thing, and so then we started putting it up on the high counter
because that'll solve it.
But then they
figured out a way to get up
that
there.
Out.
Yeah.
It was a bad weekend, and you should never have carpets. Carpets are not a good thing because it's easier to wipe that stuff up off the floor. Just so you know. Now, my dog, the older one that I know was the mastermind of this plot, might try to tell me that it was the younger one.
If he could talk.
Right? And tell me over and over until I became convinced that maybe, in fact, it was the younger one. And if he did that, would that be a case of gaslighting me?
Apparently,
when
it
I know
would
what
be.
I know, but apparently, he tries to change what I know.
Yes, apparently it would be.
What is this? You sent me this article. This is the word of the year.
It's in Webster's now. It's the Associated Press getting an exclusive preview on the word of the year.
Because it's only November.
Right.
It's very early to know the word of the year.
I love the December, November lists and things like
that. Yeah.
But everybody searches gaslighting, apparently, for like millions of people all over the world because it's being used so regularly.
I feel like it was about 2 years ago that I first heard it casually in a conversation and had to get someone to explain to me what it meant then. But this is a word that goes kind of way back to a couple of movies back in the 1940s. And there were a couple of songs this year that brought it even more into the consciousness. But I feel like it's used a lot now in terms of people talking about, what their experience was as a kid, whether it was actually something abusive or traumatic, and then saying, but it was actually told to me in a different way, and they gaslighted my experience. They discounted my experience by
gaslit
giving another count. I don't know.
It
got gaslighted.
It's mind manipulating, grossly misleading, downright deceitful. And the actual
psychological manipulation of a person,
is.
Usually over an extended period of time, that causes the victim to question the validity of their own thoughts, perception of reality, or memories, and typically leads to confusion, loss of confidence, and self-esteem. I mean, this can be a very serious thing, obviously, if this is happening in a case of abuse. It's being used more broadly than just in a case of abuse like that.
But. Well, and what I like about that definition is it explains to me on Twitter, often angry Twitter, political Twitter, why they throw that word around. Because they're trying to, people are, you know, competing views on politics, for instance, they're trying to get people to question what they believe are facts. The ultimate gaslighter, I would think, in the modern age is Donald Trump,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's exactly what he would do over and over again all day long. It's fake news. They're not telling you the truth. There's other things happening to the point where you're like, well, he says it enough. Maybe, you know, that's the attempt at gaslighting. And so there's the word of the year.
And it has been reasonably successful. What other words do you think would be in there this year?
Well, at the bottom of the article.
Oh, here we go.
There are oligarch, Omicron, codify, as in turning abortion rights into federal law, queen consort.
Yes, okay.
Raid. These are some of the searched
oligarch
words.
Oligarch because of everything that was happening in Russia and Ukraine and,
yes.
and the attempt to penalize that country by going after some of the money
yes.
that the oligarchs,
the oligarchs.
Illegally
So last year's pick was vaccine. So these are the top searched words.
Okay.
Last year was vaccine, but
people are trying to figure out what they are.
Gaslighting.
Well, queen consort.
Yes.
We were all like, what? Because it came immediately after the death
of the queen.
Of the queen. And
yes.
then we're talking about the king to be, King Charles, and then suddenly queen consort is being put out there as a term, which, unless you're actually a royal watcher or follower, it's not a term that any of us have used ever in our lifetime, right?
I remember that.
Okay, here we go. Well, you're older than me.
No,
you're not.
No, in the divorce, when the divorce happened and they became a couple.
Yes. We
Camilla
knew
and Charles.
She would be known
we
by
knew
that,
that she would be known as queen consort.
Okay.
Because.
Are you gaslighting me now, or did we actually?
No, we knew that.
Okay.
You can't be married to the king, the current king, without a title.
Right.
Like, she's got to figure out, like, what they've got to, the firm has to figure out what her title is. It can't just be Camilla. And
right.
she can't be a full queen because of the divorce. Right?
Strange, isn't it?
It's very strange. It's very strange.
Consort just, it has a, it sounds like something shady.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something, well, and not to get too morbid or controversial here, if Diana had lived and the marriage had survived, she would obviously be the queen, not the queen consort.
The people's queen.
She would have been the people's queen. But I believe she would not be, I don't know this. Because you can have a king and queen, but the king, whoever.
I'm just going to stay silent.
Yeah, whoever the monarch is must outrank. Like Prince Philip
Queen
was
Elizabeth,
not the king.
Prince Philip, right?
Yeah,
he couldn't
I don't
king.
Think. I don't think Diana. I don't know. We'll have to. I'll get back to you on this. Why
you get
is,
back to me on what? I don't even know what you're trying to answer.
Why? Why is Camilla queen consort? Is it because it's a second marriage, or is it because she's simply not a queen like Queen Elizabeth, a monarch, because the king has that role? I think it might be the latter. I think it might be the fact that she is married to the monarch, much like Prince Philip was never king. Is the text board weighing in?
No, I'm looking for answers, and I'm getting answers on everything else.
Except.
And the code word.
The code word.
580-580, if you know how it all works. Otherwise,
yes.
We'll actually look it up ourselves and do our own.
I'm going to get back to you tomorrow on Queen Consort.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. In this
24 hours in the age of Google, we're going to go 24 hours.
We are. But this is the section we always are on the radio for together.
Well, we're talking about that. I wanted to talk to you about something else, but I'm going to save that till tomorrow because now you've brought this up. And you, I'm sure you told me that I should be watching The Crown. Now you say you didn't say that you aren't completely sold on the series.
Oh, no, I said you should watch it. I was just a little...
So
not great on
I
this season.
I watched a few episodes of the first season, and then I stopped watching. So
yes.
Now everyone's talking about all the Diana stuff and how interesting it is. So I'm like, I'm not going to go all the way back.
No,
I don't
pick
have that
it up
kind
now.
Of time. So I started. I watched a few episodes of the last season before this one, and then the first few of this season.
And
I'm just struck by how completely isolated she was when
yes.
she came into that family.
Yes,
she couldn't even talk to the queen or reach the queen.
Not nice.
She's in the castle and he's off on a trip right before the wedding and no contact with her and she has no friends. Where is Sarah? I thought Sarah was her friend, Sarah
It's
Ferguson.
All a construct.
My gosh, it's awful.
It is.
I watch it and I'm just screaming at the TV, get out, Diana, save
but she
yourself.
Can't, right?
Well,
like,
she,
this is the thing. This
before
is
before
the
wedding.
She could have before the wedding. What I like about The Crown, but then she couldn't have. But what I like about The Crown is it paints that picture, like, what it's really like. And the royal family says it's fiction and everything like that. Well, look at Harry and
Meghan.
Meghan, thank you. Look at Harry and Meghan and how they had to remove themselves from a dysfunctional. Like, I'm sure that's what a lot of the stuff that they were dealing with, right? Mm-hmm. Isolation.
I mean, it is fiction to a certain extent. It's one person's telling of the story, and no one is omniscient and knows it all. But it is closer to the actual.
Oh, I think so.
Situation than any of us have seen before.
What do you think of Diana casting? Pretty good, huh?
Pretty good. You know what? Diana was one of the most beautiful, captivating women you will ever see in your lifetime. It's pretty hard to cast anyone.
Very hard.
To play that role. But yeah, the downcast eyes. That
the
kind
eyes.
Of
nailed the eyes. Wait till you get to the interview. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Nailed the interview
but
with Bashir.
But this switch in the who's playing the prince, going from someone who looks a bit like Prince Charles to someone who is extraordinarily attractive, seems like a very odd move. I don't understand that.
He's a good actor. We were just talking about this down in the newsroom.
Prince Charles is not a particularly attractive man.
Oh, now he's the king. Now you're going to get the royalists are going to text
him.
You can't call him ugly.
Queen Mother was queen consort when Queen Elizabeth was queen.
Aha. That's the answer from the text board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that would mean the divorce is not the reason for the title.
So you need the higher title. You need the person who is the reigning
monarch
to have
a higher title.
Title,
and then consort is like, you know, assistant coach.
Interesting stuff. Okay. All right, 11:18. I'm going to talk to you about all kinds of important stuff tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
That's all the time.
Well,
we
had the word and we had the queen consort.
The word. Yeah. The word. Thank you, Graham. CTV Ottawa's Graham Richardson. We will do the Monday news at 6 o'clock together this evening. Hope you can join us for that. When we come back, it is Cyber Monday today. What kind of deals are out there? How many people are taking advantage? Should you be? We'll get into that. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
You are listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
Okay. 11:24 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good Monday morning to you. Good Cyber Monday morning to you. We are into the thick of the Christmas shopping season now. If you did not get out and hit the malls on Friday, maybe you're online on this Monday or starting to think about it right now. Bruce Winder is on the line, retail expert. How are you this morning, Bruce?
Good. How you doing, Patricia?
I am very well. Do we have any sense of how busy Black Friday was or how busy Cyber Monday already is this year?
Yeah, Black Friday was pretty good. It's getting a little hard to measure, though, Black Friday, because a lot of retailers start their Black Friday sales a few days before. So you really have to look at the week. But you know what? There was more people in stores overall. There wasn't the big lineup, though, that you would normally see at like 6 or 7 in the morning. Cyber Monday, I haven't heard how it's going yet, but I'll be doing that today. But there's lots of activity out there. Most retailers are participating in this. And some sales go on through today, maybe tomorrow, and some even go on till the end of the week.
Yeah, really?
So it's a good time.
Really the sense that this used to be a one-day thing and then a weekend thing and the Friday, the Monday, and now it's really a full season thing, kind of that month before Christmas when there are a lot of Black Friday deals available in a lot of different areas and continues obviously into Cyber Monday and beyond. Are we seeing some really, really good deals out there today?
You're seeing some good deals. You know, retailers are a little motivated. They realize that consumers are only going to buy when something's on sale, and not just on sale, but on, you know, 40, 50 or 60% off. You know, this time last year, they could be a little less on the discounts because people were, you know, there was an inventory issue and COVID was still around. So people were sort of watching where they shop. Now, retailers have to be very aggressive in order to get people to purchase.
What are the best areas to get those actual big deals, the discounts? I mean, you see the TVs that seem to be going for way less than what they were a few years ago. Is it in the tech area or gadgets, that type of thing, where you tend to get the best deals?
Yeah, absolutely, Patricia. This is the main sort of player in Cyber Monday, Black Friday, is technology, consumer electronics. But you can also find some great deals in housewares and small appliances and some other products as well. And there's also a bit of an inventory glut at some retailers, so they're trying to move stuff, so turn it into cash. So you can look around, you can find some odds and sods that might surprise you.
For those of us who are not great shoppers, it feels almost overwhelming sometimes to kind of know when you should be trying to buy and when, you know, what actually are the best deals when you see it's discounted 60%, but did they hike the price originally? Or do you have tips for how people like me, who aren't that great at it, actually can make sure they are getting the best possible price?
Yeah, shop around. I mean, look online. Do your homework online with other retailers. Even look last year, you know, compare last year's price. You're probably going to see the regular retail up, you know, call it 10% because of inflation. But then you have to look, you know, what the promotional price is. But just shop around, compare retailers, look at last year, and look at the specs and features, because there's a lot of different products out there where the memory or the, you know, whatever it is, the features and benefits of the product vary by retailer. So you have to normalize for that as well.
We've talked quite a bit about how it's still a really tough year for retailers and consumer confidence is down for small businesses heading into the end of 2022, the beginning of 2023. If retailers feel like they have to offer those deep, deep discounts to get people to bite and buy, is it just another indication that it is going to continue to be a tough time for some of those businesses?
Yeah, it definitely is, unfortunately. And sadly, a lot of the small retailers will suffer the most. They're the ones who aren't as capitalized. You know, their balance sheet isn't as strong. And this is the first year in three that we haven't had government supports to for small businesses and for all businesses. So sadly, you'll probably see some small businesses and even some medium businesses go bankrupt in end of January and February.
Yeah, tough times. Bruce, when do you do your shopping?
I kind of don't shop a lot, believe it or not, even though I'm a retail expert.
You're just sick of talking about shopping at the end of the day, I bet.
Yeah, I'm just a minimalist, but I love watching retail and I get out there. So I do a little bit of shopping sort of that last week before the holiday.
Ah, okay. You're more like me than I thought. a procrastinator who's always trying to change your ways. All right.
Exactly.
So when will we have a sense of how big Cyber Monday is? Do those numbers start rolling in a little bit later today?
Yeah, we should hear from some folks later today, tomorrow. Usually Adobe tracks some things and some, you know, some big U.S. social media companies and consultants track some things. So we should start to hear some sound bites on that later today or tomorrow.
All right. Good stuff, Bruce. Thanks so much.
Okay. Have a great day. Take care.
Bruce Winder is a retail expert for us on Cyber Monday today. I'll tell you where they were doing some shopping this weekend, and it appears in big numbers with the good weather, was at the Christmas market at Lansdowne, which opened officially last week. We are going to talk to CTV's Matt Scooby about that when he arrives here right after the news. He was there for the grand lighting of the Christmas tree right in front of the Aberdeen Pavilion on Friday. We will chat about that as a lot of people out there get set for Christmas. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
You are listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl.
11:38 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good Monday morning to you. Hope you're having a good Monday so far after an excellent weekend in Ottawa. Again, pretty decent weather-wise, the temperatures we saw for end of November. What do we have, 2 days left in November after this? We have a chance of flurries and maybe rain showers today. We have 3 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud on Tuesday. And then the temperature really jumps up again with periods of rain on Wednesday. But it was kind of nice for getting out and starting to do some of those Christmassy type things without the really, really cold weather. When Matt Scooby was last here on Friday, we were talking about how much he'd have to be bundled up to head out to Lansdowne for the tree lighting. And it ended up, I think, being pretty chilly because of the wind, but it was certainly a lot better than it was the year before, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It was ridiculously cold out there.
Way more reasonable out there too. And we got our Christmas tree on the weekend, and it was like, it was beautiful.
You have your tree up now.
Yes.
Real tree.
Real tree.
Nice.
Yeah, real tree is up.
So a lot of watering gonna.
It's not sucking up a bunch of water. I'm a little bit concerned about it.
It's not. So. Oh, maybe you didn't
but
cut
I think
it properly when you put it in the stand.
So we didn't.
She says as if she knows something about it.
So I'm thinking that it was pretty fresh, to be perfectly honest, is what the thing. Because we went to Fallowfield Tree Farm, which is where we go.
Yes.
We didn't cut it down ourselves. We just kind of like wanted to go. Like there's been a couple of years where we have gone and cut it down, but
the boys were just like in, it was one of those weekends I've told a couple people downstairs, they were just in fine form all weekend. And I was just like, I am not.
Some kind of seasonal
disorder. I'm not going out like on a sleigh right now somewhere, chasing them around a dang field or anything else. It's like, I love my Christmas experiences, but like we are not doing that this weekend.
But isn't it like dogs? Wouldn't they have been better once they ran around in a field for a little bit?
Somehow they're not. We had already gone to the park that morning, and it was still bananas in the afternoon.
Your voice is up an octave here. It was quite the weekend for you. Yeah, sometimes they just get rangy, right?
I love my children. I love my children.
We all love your children.
But oh my God. Yeah, but oh my God, it was a weekend.
It's a lot. I remember, I don't know if we, did we always go when the kids were really, really young? But in the early days when they really, really want to grab the saw and be a part of the whole thing, but they're way too young to do it, and it's so stressful, and you're trying to make sure you're actually holding the saw properly and away from them. The last couple of years, my son pretty well does most of the cutting, so we just like pass that along and kind of laugh at him as he gets down on his belly and tries to figure out the angle and
of
all of that.
Trying to cut it down.
But I love actually going out and picking your tree and seeing if you can keep the family together despite everyone having picked a different tree and you're trying to reach a compromise.
It will happen again. I think like it will happen again here next year and the next couple of years. But I believe because we were at Fallowfield and they had just brought, I think like had just brought some off of like a truck or like had cut them just because we were Saturday. It was Saturday. It was like they were like super fresh. They were like unpacking them to like because people were coming and were grabbing a bunch. I think people had the same idea when it's not freezing cold outside and it was like decently warm. So
grabbing a bunch, like one for every room in the house.
Well, some people had like there was one family who had like put like there were three trees on top of the car.
Yeah, I mean, people that are decorating this early are probably really into it. So maybe they have a whole thing going on. And we would do an artificial one in the sort of ledge above the door and then another artificial one in the basement and then the real tree.
We have the real tree like in the living room and the artificial tree is not up yet.
So is it a thing then when you get it fresh, it really doesn't need that much water initially? It's not
I'm pretty sure that's a thing. Like if it's been dry and it's been sitting for a little while, and that's why you have to pay attention to like it sucking up all the water at the start. And as long as we don't, as like as long as you have it in there and you're paying attention to the, like I was expecting to wake up the next day, which I usually do. I almost get up like at night to kind of be like, huh, like make sure that it's full of water. Because it's right at the top. If you keep it watered off the beginning, and then you're going to be good. You set it up for success.
It's going to last. Yeah. And you want it to last. All right. Well, talk about setting you up for success. I think I told you famous last words on Friday. Don't mess this up with the Christmas tree. And did he? Were you watching? Did he?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It worked out.
Listen to that audio, nice and crisp on the mic. It did work out. The timing
I didn't realize
was
it was that hot. Sorry.
But wait, you said, you're always hot, man. you said something about maybe there was a little delay behind the scenes that we didn't see.
Didn't see it.
You can't tell us.
We were ready to go, and you were waiting for
CTV Ottawa,
and I was waiting for the broadcast. You know, I was like, I was killing time and making jokes or like trying to make jokes or talk about different things.
Trying to make jokes
because I was like, and our 6 o'clock producer for the news was John Ruddle, and he moved a bunch. That's why a bunch of his stuff got moved.
I was gonna say already we had in our ear that we're getting rid of this and moving right down to Lansdowne. So we bumped you up in
that's
the cast,
why.
But even then you were still having to kill time.
And it was a little bit chilly, but you know the politicians didn't speak long, which was just kind of like which is what happened, which is the underestimation. They all just kind of talked really quickly, which you almost like you want them
you
to.
You hope for, but rarely.
But they actually did.
Well,
Then I was like, I'm like panicking a little bit. It's like 6:08, and I was like, oh my God, I literally told John Ruddle like 6:50, and I can't stand up here for 7 minutes and kill that much time.
I do want to apologize to everyone who was at Lansdowne who had to listen to Matt Scooby attempt to tell.
They
jokes.
Were okay. They mostly were okay.
They're on board.
It was a good crowd though.
For
again.
The TV audience, it worked out.
Yes.
Beautifully, I was impressed with how that all came together. And again, this was at Lansdowne in front of the Aberdeen Pavilion as the Christmas market is launched, which is a wonderful thing that people talk about, give raving reviews to. I know you love it. I saw a lot of people I know out there shopping this weekend. I have actually never been. So I'm going to change that this year.
Never been to it?
So I want you to sell it to me. Why
should
I go? What's so delightful?
It's the third year of the Ottawa Christmas Market at Lansdowne. And it's, well, I told you why on the air on Friday.
I'm looking at the website. I see beaver tails and beer and I see Indian food and I'm not sure why I've never been.
So first of all, beverages, Patricia Bowl, like all the different, there are many different distilleries, many different breweries. There's lots of different places that have snacks out, that have different drink options too. I was actually surprised. I think there's more this year than there has been in previous years.
Why do people say that like it's one word that can't be split up? Beverages, Patricia Bowl.
Because it can't. Well, because we, if you listen to this program or watch CTV News at 6, you know why. So there's that along with the snacks. Like I saw like some soft pretzels. Like I'm a sucker for like a good like soft yeah. pretzel, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like one of the first things I see when I walked through the entrance. I was like, yep, sign me up. But on top of like, so there's tons of food, lots of beverages from all local spots. Don't forget, this is all local. That's one of the biggest things.
There's a candy cane chalet.
But then I didn't see that one. But then there's, so there's lots of different makers. There's lots of different local artisans. So I saw like fun socks when I was there, some scarves, some toques. You can do some of your Christmas shopping, but it feels like when you walk in there, they have the whole place like cordoned off. And they're all of them are in like old they look like chalets, like they look like wooden little buildings,
beautiful.
Like from the European markets that you kind of see. They're going to have a ton of entertainment over the course of at evening at night. So on Friday, like we had a couple of bands. Well, we talked to one of the guys from one of the bands, the Lionels, who was playing, and Santa is going to be there a ton. That's not maybe necessarily for you, but for the kids and for the families, they're going to have lots of different activities with Santa over the course of the next few weekends, who is going to be around. It's just kind of – it's cool when you get in there and you – like with the lights over top and the way they've strung them and the way that it feels, people walking around with warm drinks and food and doing some Christmas shopping. They usually have a fire if it's cold enough. Or there's a fire going right in the middle of it too. So it's just got – it's got one of those feels where, you know, if it's chilly, especially you're not staying very long and that's okay. But you can go and you can get, you know, a hot toddy or you can get a warm drink and you can be walking around. You can experience it. It's a lot of fun.
Nice atmosphere. I love how you're like, Santa, that's not for you, Patricia. You stick with the beverages.
Right.
I'm still on the food site here. This one is for you. And I know I have to let you go head downstairs to do the CTV Ottawa News at noon. But Hungry Elf, classic Canadian tailgate meets Southern barbecue. Join us and warm up with all of your favorites in one place. Hungry Elf.
That sounds
all weekend.
Delicious.
You got to get a picture by the sign.
We're going to have to bring the kids down. Like we're going to go down with the boys at some point over the next few weekends.
When they're not rangy.
Yeah, when they're not. Is that the word you use? Rangy?
Yeah.
Okay, I like it. I'm going to steal it. Yeah, rangy. It's exactly what they were.
11:46 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We'll be back to wrap up the show in just a moment.